Now, it is not a fact that he was able to explain the heaven of Christianity and the world as we see it. And he could, I cannot say he reconciled the two. I only wanted to speak about it because there was a kind of a reflection of Christian thought on him, and he had an insight which had got from Christian theology, that this world by itself cannot be explained. Unless you accept rationally the existence of God, therefore he believed God, belief in God to be rational. And God, rational in the sense that it is He who harmonizes and allows events to occur because they are harmonious with each other. And therefore, rationality of man consists in discovering the harmony. Now, this insistence upon harmony and perception of harmony as a part of rationality was affirmed by Leibniz very powerfully. You will recall, I'm speaking in parentheses, Sherwood says in the very first chapter, all problems of existence are essentially problems of harmony. It is one of the most fundamental rational propositions that Sherwood has made in the life. All problems of existence are essentially problems of harmony. Rationality is guided by seeking for harmony. Where there is no seeking of harmony, it's not rational. If you don't seek harmony, anything can happen in the world pell-mell. The world is pell-mell. It is not rational. Now, we have reached only the midpoint of the development of rationality as the development of ethics. We move forward and we find that thereafter there was a turn in the Western thought. A new development of thinking as to what is thinking and what is rational. And there developed the theory of empiricism as opposed to rationalism. In other words, the entire tradition of Plato came to be questioned. Now, this questioning was inherent actually in Aristotle. As we marked earlier, that Aristotle tried to combine the becoming and being, and he revolted against Plato because Plato was not able to reconcile being and becoming. And he thought that he could do so. And if you look at it impartially, he did not actually succeed in doing so. But the cleavage was there, and there was, as it were, a kind of a trend of thought, a trend which emphasized the being and universality and permanence on the one hand, and a movement which emphasized becoming. And although up till now, there was some way of combining being and becoming, although in a very loose manner, in a haphazard manner, and the problem had remained unresolved, there was here and now a clear departure which said that Plato and all its tradition was fundamentally not acceptable, it's not rational. It does not take into account sufficiently the world as we see it. The becoming is very much minimized, the importance of the becoming is very much minimized in the whole history of philosophy. Except Aristotle tried to give some place to it. And Leibniz, who gave place to it through his theory of compossibility. But neither Lysias was able to reconcile being and becoming, nor was Aristotle capable of doing this. Therefore, instead of carrying the baggage of this problem all the time, the time came and said we should not be blocked by this baggage of universality, baggage of permanence, and this law of necessity. And a new trend arose in which we said we should see the becoming as it is, not in the context of permanent universal, but we should see the world becoming, the world of becoming, as it is. And how do we know the world of becoming? By experience. It is not by the help of the ideas of universals and permanence and all that, of which Plato and others have spoken. We see the world as it is by experience. Now, this emphasis on knowledge of by experience and ideation or rationality, which follows the logic of the becoming, became now a more prominent feature. And that movement is right up till now continuing. Empiricism ultimately came to a climax in Hume. And Hume pointed out that experience is the only means of knowledge, and we have no experience in the world except sense experience. In the sense experience, there is no perception of universality, no perception of permanence, no perception of causality, no perception of explanation, no explanation. The whole world is simply what it is, and take account of the world as it is. And rationality consists in doubting any proposition which speaks of certainty of knowledge, which speaks of universality of knowledge, absoluteness of knowledge. Confine yourself only what you can know probably. And therefore, he is regarded as a skeptic. So, skepticism became the hallmark of rationalism. Becoming has to be understood directly, and this becoming can be understood with no other standard excepting doubting. You can make even the laws of induction, were according to him not sustainable. Even the laws of science, he said, even scientific knowledge can be questioned. So rationality came to consist in criticality and skepticism. So this is another mark of rationality which came to be underlined in the Western thought. It seemed as if with the arrival of Hume, rationality came to conclude that nothing can be known. And to assert that nothing can be known is a rational proposition and no other rational proposition at all. This created a great crisis in the Western history of rationality. Is it really true that scientific laws which seem to give necessities are not valid? Is it not a fact that the things can fall and must fall directly? We do know. But if experience is the means of knowledge, the only means of knowledge, you can only say, I see things falling, but do you see they must fall? In experience, you don't see they must fall. They are falling, but you do not see the must. Necessity is never seen. That the sun will rise tomorrow is expectation. And maybe it does rise tomorrow, but there is no necessity it must rise. May not rise tomorrow. As Hume says, I come out of my room and go away, and my room is on a hill, nobody pursues it at all. How am I to be sure that this room does not disappear when I go out of the room? It is true, when I come back, it is there. It is quite possible that it is always there when I see it. But there is no necessity that the house must be continuing to exist. Now, many of these propositions, many people laugh at, but actually they are very serious propositions. And it is because of the seriousness that Kant said he himself was awakened from his dogmatic slumber by Hume. By reading Hume, he felt that he was having a dogmatic slumber. And Hume could challenge him so powerfully that he was awakened. And because he was awakened, he felt the necessity of reformulating the whole rational fabric of human mind. Try to understand it. And that's why he wrote the famous book called The Critique of Pure Reason. And that is the whole theory of reason as he defined it. It's extremely important. He said that our human rationality consists of four complexes, four boxes we might say, four spectacles, and two additional spectacles. Four he calls four categories, and two he calls two intuitions. They are automatic in your human mind. Rationality consists of putting everything in space and time. It is inevitable that whatever you see in the becoming, you cannot but see it in the context of space and time. This you can be absolutely sure. Why? Because your structure of reason is such, your human mind is such, and you cannot transcend human structure. It is there, it's your structure of the brain. Nobody can change it. It is there, pressing upon you. So you must see space and time. And everything is in space and time. And there are four categories. Everything in the world can be summarized into four forms. Quantity, quality, relation, modality. There is nothing in human knowledge which can transcend these four forms. One and many and plenty. There is no other quality, positive, negative and neutral. Relation, causality, etc., etc. Modality maybe, may not be, is, and will not be. These are the only modes of your existence. There is no other proposition excepting 12 propositions that you can make, and all in space and time. So 12 forms of proposition. For under 4 categories, each one can make 3 propositions. So rationality consists in finding every proposition in this form. Well, one of the forms of proposition is, if it is fitted in, it is rational, provided it is put in the context of space and time. But this is all what we call phenomena. And this is what we call phenomenal reality. But he saw that phenomena themselves, this is the important point, rationally, phenomena rationally takes you to that which is beyond phenomena. He perceived that if you are rational, you have got to affirm that phenomena by themselves are only structures. There must be a reality behind it, behind this phenomenon, which he called noumenal. Phenomenal is what we see around, and it's a noumenal. Therefore, rationality consists in analyzing all the phenomena under 12 propositions, provided they are in the form of space and time. But leaving this proposition at the same time, that all these ultimately must be grounded in what he called the transcendental. He said, transcendental is not merely a possibility, it's a necessity of thought. To be rational is to be absolutely certain there must be a transcendental. In a sense, we might say, was reaffirming Plato and the whole rationalistic movement. But again, he said, what is that noumenal? as long as we have got this reason, we can never know, because you cannot transcend the structure. Whatever we see, whatever we know, will be only in this form. Therefore, we can only be sure that there must be a ground, there must be a transcendence, but transcendence cannot be known. Therefore, his philosophy is called agnosticism, not skepticism, because he is sure that there is a ground. But he says it cannot be known, therefore it is agnostic. You cannot know, you are sure it cannot be known. So, restoration consisted in admission of agnosticism regarding the transcendence and framing everything that we see in the world under these 12 propositions. But he added one important point. And that brings now the concern for moral ideas.